You're listening to Let's Go, a podcast about weekly anime, from Dynamite in the Brain, Secret of the Sword of Madness. So come along and hang with Let's Go Gang. It's Dwayne.
Hey.
And it's me, Niall. That's a funny order, because Brian is unwell at this moment in time, so we're going to step in, because as good crewmates do, as good gang fellow gang members do, we're going to step up.
He assures us it's not the pox, so hopefully he will be on a speedy recovery.
Yes, thoughts and prayers, as always. But to the matters at hand, we're talking about anime that aired the week of November 9th to November 15th. Starting off with what we got on the menu first. The one that I skimmed through a little bit, but I got the gist of. Mr. Osamatsu series, season 3, episode 5. Well, yeah, The Way Home.
Yeah, first part is Well, Yeah, and the second part is The Way Home. I think it's just titled as The Way Home. Mm-hmm. The first part had bits in it that made me laugh. And then the second one, I was like, oh, this is a really interesting premise. You're going to do anything with it? And the answer was no.
Beckett-esque, I suppose.
Yeah.
A lazy comparison.
But I don't think you mean it like that.
No. Maybe they think it's Beckett-esque. Yeah, I'm not sure it gets all the way there. A lot of introspection happening on here. In the first bit, I played up for laughs. It's kind of something, a really joke that's got like a long lead up to the punchline in a bit, but it's kind of obvious what's going to happen from the get-go. Yeah. Essentially, Todomatsu is going around, he's just like staring up at the moon and looking out the window and just sighing. And Ichimatsu and Juicimatsu is like, hey bro, what's up? You alright? It's just, okay. Well, it just turns around and faces him and just goes,
yeah, initially he can only make, like, false goldfish noises kind of thing, which I was just like, are they going somewhere with this? It's like, no, that's just a weird side joke that they drop pretty quick.
Yeah. But what's happened to him is that he's to somebody that he likes. He's like, oh, you like somebody? Oh, who is it? Oh, it's not anybody you know. It's just, there's this lady. She works in the chemist's, and I know we got this whole vibe going on, man, because you know how, like, we go up, you buy something, and fun. Usually the person at the till is there to give you your change. That's fucking down on a counter at you.
But yeah, they just drop it in your hand. Yeah.
But this lady was here, you know, she's giving me my change. She cupped my hand and then like pressed her own hand into it. I was doing a change. And it's just, I felt the connection, man. It was looking electric. And then I went in there and I was hungover as shit. I was in a complete state. And she saw me just there, kind of crouching down. She just started rubbing me in the back. It's like, man, that's fucking. Oh, and Ichimatsu is just like,
she gave you the. She touched your body. That's a body touch, man. Ichimatsu is like, as Jushimatsu points out, is like, oh, so this is what the thing is when a virgin falls in love with someone else because someone told them the intimate story. And Ichimatsu is like, oh, that sounds so good. But
Jushimatsu gave me her number.
Yeah, she gave me a gift, and Jushimatsu's like, that's. I mean, like, he's not saying it out loud. He's just like, dude, that's just fucking. That's a sample from. It's like she was asking me about my like health and how regular I am, and shit like that. It's like, dude, she works at a pharmacy, and you were hungover, so she wants to give you the right shit. The fuck is wrong with you? This is just customer care. She appears to be good at her job, and that's about all you know about this woman.
But they're trapped in the fantasy, and then they go into the bath. It's like, oh, you like someone? Oh, one guy can have it, you know. And then Karamatsu, and it's like, bro, I got something I got off on say as well, you know, and told at I was talking about there somebody I like as well. Because when they're talking in the bathroom, he wanted to say he likes him and didn't give him the whole backstory of this. It's like, there's this lady who works at the chemist pharmacy, and et cetera, yeah. Et cetera.
And Karamatsu comes out to his brother, Choromatsu, saying, it's like, ah, don't tell the rest of the guys, but like, I like her as well. But, you know, I'm gonna step aside and give it to my baby brother, you know, because I can't really be getting in the way of his. It'll break my heart to break his heart, you know, that kind of way. And then it's like this love affair, and it's like, ooh, because one brother wants to confess, and the other brother would like to confess, but he can't get in the way of his other brother's care. And you got the two brothers like cheering them on from the sidelines. You got the two other brothers of Osamatsu and Jushimatsu kind of going like, no, this is not what you think it is, guys.
It's strange that Jushimatsu is the
straight guy for once.
Reason here. Yeah.
It's a fun one because he's so dumb, but like he's obvious. So I guess he can figure out what the obvious thing is here. It's going about as well as you can imagine. There's a confrontation between the two brothers, and they're going to fight over this girl, and then they're like, "Nah, I don't want to get in your way, brother," says Karamatsu, and Tuddy's like, "Yeah, thanks, bro. Real cool."
No, we're supposed to go. We're supposed to like give you this appreciation, you know. And you can see all I see now that whatever I feel about this woman that loved my brother should always supersede that, right? Like, no, man, no, I'm gonna go ask her out. But I'm gonna go for her.
You better forget about her. And he's like, "All right, I'm going for her too." And then it becomes a whole thing, and you have the two brothers watching them fight. It's like, no, brothers fighting over love. This shouldn't happen. And the other two going like, guys. What the fuck? Get it together. They both confess. We don't see what happens. Guess what the fuck happened? She doesn't know these motherfuckers. She might have thought they were the same guy, which is one thing I was thinking. Because besides the two brothers in conflict, the one brother / two brothers cheering you on and the one brother knowing what shit is going on / two brothers know what shit is going on, it's like they have to fill the extra roles with like the two separate brothers. You only need four people for this story, but they have six.
Yes.
It goes about as well as you can imagine. They get shut down, but there was a few jokes in it that did make me like laugh. Just mostly like the reaction faces of the brothers kind of going like, no, this is you've really misinterpreted the situation.
Yeah, just made a little bit like in the tone of it, where it's just like this it feels like this very trite and treacly kind of love story. Always hallmark films they've been putting on at work lately. It's like, beat repeat, like one of these, or some other kind of very...
some kind of thing where it's like a meet cute or something like that. Yeah, yeah.
Very
yeah.
Kind of, a serendipitous meeting, you know, that is the stuff of, like, melodramatic daytime television. That kind of a way. Yeah. The second part of it, then, way home is as they're in full introspection mode, as they're trying to make their way back at night, just walking.
And I like the way, like, it does the slow reveal, because they're kind of like, you know, it's late at night. They're talking, but they're not like talking too much. They're obviously coming back from something pretty late. They all got little bags. They're all in suits, and I was thinking, were they all on a job interview or something? And I was like, it's a bit late for them to be doing that, but it's eventually revealed that they were at a classmate's wedding. And again, Jushimatsu, the voice of fucking reason. Interesting to switch up the roles a little. Where he's trying to bring up, bring it up kind of deeper thing. He's like, hey guys, do you think we should think about like marriage and getting older and moving on with our fucking lives and shit? And they keep changing the subject as to talking about the wedding. Your man, he looked like really embarrassed and he was really nervous. And then the bride she was super hot, guys.
Yeah, and you're banging every night. You know that, right? Oh, yeah, totally. I know that feeling, dude.
Yeah, yeah. They're like all like taking the piss or shooting the shit, or they all have a slight variation on it. And again, Jushimetsu going like, guys, shouldn't we? But eventually that talking about these grown up things, it's like, isn't this the first one we've been to? First wedding we've all been invited to? And they're like, yeah, it fucking is. You guys want to get married? And you know, they start talking about that. It's like, hey, I want to have kids. Yeah, kids are great. You know, they all start like getting introspective, and then they're like, man, fucking, what was it like for our parents? Like, and then they had six kids at the same time. Man, that sucks. It must have cost a lot of money. I mean, like, not that I'd know, because I didn't raise any kids. And they're like, wait, it's still costing the money. And they're like, shit, we should probably do something with our lives. But yeah, it's just a lot of shots of them kind of walking around, and I was like, this is a good premise. You gonna take this anywhere? Not particularly. Just again, the kind of analysis of the shits that these guys are, and them not doing anything about it.
And then as they turn the corners, you know, they take another direction, but they're starting to come down on a different side of the discussion. It's like, haha, it's very cute and all, but
again, like a shot of them walking away in the street mirror, like, you know, reflecting on the situation. I get it. I get what you're doing here. Symbolism.
Yeah, it's Like, it's fine.
It's well written. It's a good character piece. They're bouncing off each other really fucking well. I mean, like, these guys are fucking, I mean, they're good voice actors anyway, but they're doing a good job of bouncing off each other as a six-man group. But it's not funny.
I think we should have probably maybe like have relinquish any sort of grip on it being funny, you know, they're trying to do. I suppose as much as they kind of like went on at the start about, oh, we're gonna be doing the same old shit, you're stuck with us, maybe you should like well, you can't really fault them off for not doing anything different when you have them seeming to be thinking about more serious things more deeply for longer. Rather than having kind of linger away. Unless it's to do this for 25 episodes, episode 26 just pulled the rug. I was like, fuck that shit. Aliens are invading me. Gotta play baseball again. You know, like they've done.
Yeah. Like, I feel like it's happened to me before. I was like, oh, they're taking this thing in a serious route? Nah, they're not gonna do that. They might make reference to the time they were serious before, but only to take the piss out of it, that kind of thing. And I'm just like, you can't have it both ways, guys. It'd be nice to have the serious introspection with also some joking. Not like wacky cartoon hijinks as they're capable of, but like some I don't know, self-depreciation jokes or something like that mixed in between. Yeah, it wasn't that it was bad to watch. It was like, I think it was well put together, this episode, but I didn't find it very entertaining.
It's just need to steel yourself that they're going to be like dipping into this more frequently with this series of it, at least. So maybe I should recalibrate myself before sitting down with it. It's just when you get kind of like, oh, they're opening us all fun and bouncy and fun and crazy. That's like, oh yeah, go get some laughs out of this. And you're kind of like, no, maybe not this time. It's not what they're going for again. But again, if we want to see new things out of them, then this is what they're going to do. We can't be complaining that much.
Yeah. But
whatever.
Yeah. Maybe they are trying to do something new and different, but maybe it's not going to be something we're interested in. That can happen too.
Like Joe, so us, we're still like checking in every week at least, you know. that's the off chance that it could change.
Yeah.
Well, we are definitely checking in every week, and what is very entertaining and is introspective as well, a lot into the bargain, is Golden Kamuy number 30, Bad Sign. The conclusion of the sniper battle with the Russian border guards.
Really, really fucking good bit. I did like the kind of double blind of, I'll make it look like I'm hiding in an obvious position, which is obviously the fake position, and lead it to what my real position is, whereas the obvious position was his position. Because he's trying to outthink a sniper, whereas a regular person would see a cloak hunched up in the tree, and it's just like, oh, that's clearly him. A sniper would go like, that can't be him. I don't see the breath. You know, I'm going to wait for hours to see how this fucking goes down. Whereas a regular soldier would have just shot that thing that looked like a guy, and they would have hit him.
Yeah. You could have bluffed. It's like, you know, oh, I can see tracks that have been covered up leading away from that obvious decoy. It's going up into where is it? It's one of those Uilta coffins with the sky burial of the local people here. He's hiding inside that, of course. It takes aim to aim a rifle down the sides of that, and as soon as he does, out from under the sheet where an obvious decoy was, it's Ogata, and she plugs him right in the side of the face.
Yeah, and the how he'd been avoiding it is he'd again trying to outthink a sniper. He'd been eating snow all night, so his breath wasn't thing, but he's absolutely freezing when he comes out of the woods, and the lads were looking at the body, kind of thinking, should we go look for Ogata? He's like, nah, we're getting in between two snipers, we'd be shot. So, and he's explaining his background with, when I was 15, the reason he has a wanted poster with my face on it is when I was 15, I was one of the assassins for I was going to say emperor. It's the king, isn't it? Sorry. I'm trying to remember.
It was the Tsar of Russia, the emperor.
Tsar. Yeah. I thought I knew I had the wrong word. But he has a flashback to him kind of lobbing it's like a briefcase bomb, basically. Trying to lob that into the carriage, but he misses. But someone picks up the bag and throws it in and gets like a look at the fucking Tsar before it. And it was Wilk. Wilk was, they killed the Tsar.
Yeah, well, it was a Polish dude who threw the bomb that dispatched the emperor. Yeah,
who's to say it's not this version?
So also where he got the red scar from.
Definitely one that cut across his face, because he was blinded as as he was carrying Wilk away from that situation. And as the Serpent's kind of peeling back the wanted poster, it is her father as the second wanted guy that they're looking for. They presume they don't know where Wilk is, so they like, if you see these two guys, they're accomplices, kill them.
Yeah. So that's why he's like explaining, like trying to explain later on, was Shiraishi is like trying to say, Serpent, phone, those two are, Kerrang has obviously brought you here because he wants you to try and remember if this is of your dad because you got the key that cracks the code leads to the gold. So how about fucking you need to get the fuck out of here? But Kerrang over here says, like, fun. Let me just like throw on that now. I killed the Emperor of Russia, but I also killed the man who signed the Treaty of St. Petersburg, which ceded, the Japanese half of Sakhalin to Russia, and in exchange for the Kuril Islands, which is, it goes on to this day that dispute.
But like, he basically doesn't deny the whole thing of, yeah, I want Serpa to figure out the puzzle so I can get the gold in order to free the native peoples, the Ainu and the other native peoples on the western part of Russia, the eastern part of Japan, that kind of thing.
Yeah, like he mentions that my mother was a Karafuto, or his grandmother even was a Karafuto Ainu who was sold to the peoples of Tunguska. So this goes back a long way that this...
And it was Wilk's father was a Ainu, was it? Or
his mother was a Karafuto Ainu as well, yeah.
Sorry, yeah. I was trying to remember the lineage there. So obviously they're still connected to their people. He's still trying to carry out Wilk's thing. And he's laying it all out. He's not going like, listen, I'm not trying to fucking hide this from Serpa. I want her to believe in the thing I believe in.
Yeah.
Which is like, that's a good way to fucking do it, bro. That's a good way to get someone on side. And even before that, Serpa had said that she wasn't going to run. Because she's also, in the way that he's using her, she's also using him. That she's trying to find out what kind of man her father was, and if he killed a bunch of fucking his own people, and if he was doing the right thing, if we do get to the end of this fucking gold, what am I going to use it for?
Will it be worth all the bloodshed in the end?
Yes.
Sure, stay in the ground or wherever it is.
Like the image of us, like, will it be worth all the killing and stuff, and the blood kind of flowing over the screen, but also over an image of Sugimoto. It's like, because like, he might be standing in the way and he might be one they have to kill. I mean, like, they've already tried to, specifically.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All this while then, Ogata is recuperating in the tent belonging to the cousin of the local guides who were picking him across the way.
Old man who got shot, who's still okay,
He's all right, which I'm happy about.
Most of the damage. I was just like, fucking hell. Like, he's not doing well, but like, he's up on his feet by the end of it. I did like that, you know, and there was various other bits that was quite good with Shiraishi going, like, it's like, hey, Serpa, I'm going to go take a shit. No watching. And she's like, why the fuck would I watch you? And he's like, you know, and he's still being like a weirdo, but I like the way he figured it out. And he's using this opportunity. Okay, the sniper guy is down for the fucking count. This guy's in the tent talking to the lads. Now's my chance to lay out. I'll figure out what's happened to Serpent. I'll put it all the pieces together. He's an idiot, but he's not that fucking stupid.
Yeah.
He's trying to do right by her as well. But, we have our sniper boy Ogata having fever dreams and seeing and images of a dead guy with a hole in the back of his head leaking out. And as soon as I saw that, I was like, he killed that guy. You know, yes. I did like the way it was set up that, you know, part of his background, but I don't think you knew all of this.
This is his half-brother, Yusaku, who was in the 7th Division with him.
And his brother was the father. His father and mother were like of like royal lineage, whereas he was his mother was a mistress to the guy. Was it?
It's like Ogata's father was like a prestigious like general in the army, and he is the son of him and one of his mistresses. I guess.
Yeah,
like,
no, I'm just making sure I had it right.
Yeah, I think like his half-brother Den Yusaku was with him here. He's like the
heir,
the favorite son, the heir. Yeah, and he is the flag bearer in their unit. So he is just the dude who carries a flag in the battle, trying to rally all the guys. Come on, take him over the hill and across the trench. We'll take these guys out. And there's a superstition like surrounding him that
Ogata's explaining this superstition after he's brought his brother. He's saying, come on, brother, we'll go out drinking. And he's brought his brother to a brothel, and he's explaining to, I guess, the audience and to his brother. It's like the myth is that a virgin is very, not hard to kill, but is like lucky. So like they used to tie like virgin women's pubes like in a little like in a charm. To wear, but also, yeah, and it became the same with virgin males, which is why you want your flag bearer to be a virgin dude, because that means that if you're standing behind the dude at the front running at the enemy with a flag, you're less likely to get shot, and it emboldens you, so you're more likely to fucking run up there and kill the enemy. And he's like, come on, brother, I'm not gonna fucking tell anyone you fucked around with some prostitutes, it's cool. And the brother's like, nah, can't do it, man. And he's like, all right, ladies, if you can just show him all the back, make sure nobody sees him, head out, kind of thing. And he he meets with, again, this is all in his fevered flashbacks.
Yeah, well, it seems to be a thing he's got going on with Tsurumi, where Tsurumi is asking the guy to get in good with his half-brother here, because
the men love him.
The men love him. He's worried about that. He wants to make sure that she's kept her wife, but he wants to kind of get him on side, because if we can get
to win the men over, and if you want to get him on side, then you got to win over the guy who they like. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, probably wouldn't hurt that he's the son of like highfalutin general as well. He's dead by this stage, I think, because
he
will die after the war. In fact,
yeah, that's it. You got it. Yeah, just getting the timeline right, but. Tsurumi's trying to get him on board, but he's like, yeah, he doesn't seem like he's gonna go for it. Tsurumi's like, yeah, well, we can't kill him because, you know, men like him too much. And Ogata's kind of like, can't we though? Can't we though? And
because somebody of that like prestigious lineage, you know, if he's got a sense of justice, that'll make it all the more difficult
to win men over to my sense of justice. Yeah.
Make a man out of him. If a brothel didn't work, then we'll try another way. So after
if you can't take his sexual virginity, you can certainly make him lose his killing people virginity.
Yeah.
Because he pulls him into the battlefield and he's like, hey, we shouldn't be out here. The lieutenant's going to give out to us and shit. There's just dead bodies strewn everywhere. And he's like, here, I tied up this guy. Here, take this knife and fucking stab him. Because you haven't killed anyone yet, I know this, bro. Most flag bearers, they don't carry a gun, but they do pull out the sword once they hit enemy lines. And he never has. And it's just like, kill this guy, and you're good. Because you can't be the only one to come out of this war pure. You can't be the only one not be fucking stained by killing people.
Yeah, but it's like, it's maybe just a thing, you know, that's my family believe, but I should be like this kind of the standard bird to these guys, because, you know, besides kind of like raising their spirits and leading them into battle, you know, I've seen like, you know, that they've got to kill so many life people and take so many lives, you know, for their own self-defense and defend our country, but you can't feel guilty about that. So maybe to kind of see me going by and I'm this pure shining example, you know, to see there's something still pure and good in this world, and then I can maybe like alleviate some of that guilt.
Yeah, like he's thinking that if he can be like their, if he can be their symbol, like of someone who comes out of war without having killed, without having brought himself that low, then maybe there's a chance for redemption for them after they've killed. That kind of thing. And he's hoping to do that, and he refuses to do that. And he's even like Tsurumi's just like, fucking, like, people don't feel guilt when they kill, sorry, Tsurumi.
Ogata
is saying, people don't feel guilt when they kill people. Everyone's like me. And he's hugging his brother, and he's like, no, you're not like that, bro. I know you're not like that. You're better than this. And he seems to be like tearful and everything. He's worried that his brother's like gone too fucking far. War has corrupted him. And he seems to genuinely care about his brother. And a guy that's just like, you know, blank faced. But you can tell it's just like, how fucking dare you think you're better than me, or that I'm better than you think, that kind of way.
No, well, it's more like he believes so deeply and fervently that everyone who says that is lying. Like, everyone is like,
I
know this world is like he's had a tough go of it in his life. And when he meets somebody who diverts away from that philosophy that he has. He can't fucking process it. Like, does not compute. I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
It could be some form of sociopathy or something like that. But yeah, it's clear that his brother found out. Was like, oh wow, I have a brother. I'm gonna love him with all my heart and be pure and be good to the men and give them something to strive towards. And he's just trying to be a decent fucking dude in a shitty goddamn war. Whereas Ogata has had a shitty life and cannot possibly imagine that kind of point of view.
Yeah.
He assumes his brother's up to fucking something. So we see on the battlefield his brother running ahead in the lines, and wouldn't you know it, he fucking gets shot right through the head.
Takes him from behind.
From the opposite side, from his own lines. Yeah. But he does, like, turn around before he dies. Like, it's like the last... And I don't know whether that's just in Ogata's head or whatever.
Embellishment, maybe.
Could be. Just actually some form of guilt, maybe? But yeah, him turning around to look behind because he knows exactly what the fuck has just happened.
Yeah. But again, it's interesting. There's like a guy who was wired like this, having fucking this fever dream where he's getting the fixed vapor rub applied. there is something that does haunt me as much as every fiber of my being. Like, tells me that no, these things won't haunt me. They won't follow me around. I'm a machine. I'm a perfect machine of snipe.
I love killing. Killing's my favorite thing. Killing is good.
Yeah. Except this one killing you did, which does still get to you.
Yeah. That he's still it's still something that haunts him for sure. Yeah.
It's fun as well as like seeing Sarumi in the past as well, and kind of like kind of needling about this. It's just like this really fucking sense of him. Like kind of like Brian was saying, how like these things kind of come together like later on. You kind of go back and check what way he talks to people. It's like, because it says like he will believe anything you fucking wanted to if it thinks it'll like get you on side to be of use to
someone.
It's like, sure thing, man. I think nobody feels guilty to kill somebody. Sure, I think it's acceptable to be drinking before 10:30 in the morning. Sure, dessert pizza are a great idea. Yeah, anything you feel like.
Yeah, very much so. We'll do anything if he get them on side, on his side. We get a lot of I've forgotten the northern tribe. I keep thinking Ainu.
We'll have folk remedies.
Yeah, the folk remedies. And obviously they're using actual medicine, like boiling those particular herbs and whatnot. But also you got the guy with it looks like a baron. I mean, like, animal skin stretched over a hoop is very fucking common throughout multiple cultures, but he's just there being like the doctor making loads of noise, and Shirishi and our girl getting in on the music playing to haunt, to scare out the sick demons, the demons of sickness. And Ogata is like, shut up, I'm trying to fucking sleep. But it's more so the idea, like, and they're saying is like, oh yeah, it causes the gods to come down to scare away the ghosts. It's like an alarm bell for the gods to scare away the ghosts of sickness. But for Ogata, it's keeping him awake and it's keeping him thinking about what the fuck he did, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I did like that kind of comparison, that it's just like, hey, it might be hocus pocus false stuff, but it in its own way, it is making sense, and it is not making him better, but it's forcing him to confront illnesses of the mind as well as physical illness. He does get better after, I assume, like what is probably like a few days or a day or two in this tent.
Yeah, it weighs well. And before they leave, the shaman tells her fortune as well with a reindeer shoulder blade bone, which you throw into the fire and then like cracks and appear in it from the heat. And
depending where the cracks appear or how many or what shape they take, because I imagine they take the same rough shapes, it being a standardized bone, it means a different thing. One crack here means you'll hunt a bear. Two cracks here means you'll hunt a deer, that kind of thing.
That kind of way. So to get one that's, you know, it runs like, you know, like one straight line, and it's like makes splits in the fork, and it says, oh, people will come from behind. It's like, okay, that's probably bad. Good.
And it's like, no, it's only bad if it has another crack on top of that one.
If it has these kind of like two prongs that come out of it, like devil horns, I suppose. Good thing we didn't get that then. Then they make to say goodbye, thank you for the hospitality. And it's time for you to be making tracks too, Shiraishi. You're not cut out for this. If you're, I'm a wanted man in Russia, secure around here, and you know, we're going to help us into danger.
And so I'll be just dragging you into it. Everyone has a copy of your fucking tattoo anyway, you don't matter that much. very, very mean to poor. And he's just like, yeah, okay, I guess I'll stick behind. And he's kind of like standing there talking to the guys who I assume do not speak a word of Japanese. No. It's just like, well, time, I guess I got to figure out who's going to win this fucking game. And I'll slide up with them. Maybe I'll just fucking slide up the Tsurumi and go like, hey, maybe I can get a piece of that pie once you win. And then he's kind of like, God damn it. And the, no, wait for me, guys.
Sugimoto did tell me to keep an eye on a Serpa if he couldn't make it. So, yeah.
And I assume he still thinks that Sugimoto didn't make it. And he's doing the honorable thing. He's looking out for a Serpa, like going by his friend's wishes, his dead friend, inverted commas, wishes. But when he catches up to him, he's like, I'm going to get me some fucking Russian prostitutes. Hee-hee-hee. I was like, sure, Aishi.
Oh, don't blame me if your dick hurts when you get there. It's like, don't worry. I got my charm from the shaman. They were discussing charms really well. Like, keep seeing this away. He's got one to chip like a dick.
I think it's a small child's dick as well, which is just an extra fucking bit to rub it in.
Oh, thanks so much. How do you know my dick hurts every time I leave the brothel? Oh, this is so nice.
He may be a complete shit, but he's our complete shit, so it's fine. And also, he does have some sense of honor or duty or doing the right fucking thing while also being a complete shit.
Yeah. Oh, but it should have stayed maybe a few minutes more because then you would have seen the rest of that thing, the rest of the fortune telling, because the shoulder blade
as still it's cooling.
Left in the fire as it's cooling down. Two more cracks appear. That's the bad sign. The sign
someone's coming from
of
behind
misfortune.
And they're going to get you. Yeah. good stuff. Good stuff. I mean, like, I know it's a lot of flashback and whatnot. The sniper battle was really good. The flashback was really interesting. And even though the way it was framed, it's like, oh, I know exactly how the fuck this went down. It was just interesting to see it play out. And a lot of it is from an unreliable narrator's point of view of Ogata. Like, his brother's face, or at least his eyes, are always in shadow.
Yes.
And that's because, I guess, Ogata doesn't really see people as people, that kind of thing. Really, really well put together visuals.
I had a little detail as well during the duel where it's really kind of zooming in their face, obviously, as they're staring down the scope, where it's like dipping out in the cold so long that their lips are all chapped.
That was Ogata because he kept eating snow to make sure his breath didn't show.
No, don't do like Vasily as well.
He's probably doing the
same trick as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's Gurren Kamui as a comic is, of course, very interested in any little details. You know,
yeah,
always, we get all
sure.
these cultural notes so often, but it's like goes down really deep into every aspect of it. I mean, you see little visual hints of that there. If I happen to over-explain it like we have just been doing.
yeah. It's grand. The characters, I think, behave in a very realistic and interesting fashion. Like, your man just laying out to us, but yes, I am using you. I am hoping to win you over so that you can figure out how to get the goal, and we'll use it for the plan that I believe in, and I'm trying to make you believe in that plan. I'm laying it all fucking out there. So he's not being duplicitous about it, but he is like, it is still like, yeah, he does want to do his own, he has his own fucking reasons for doing what he's doing.
Yeah.
So it's kind of nice just for the characters. We all have different views on what the right thing is to do here, but just laying it out rather than being secretive about it.
Yeah. We can see someone else's secret plan in action in Jujutsu Kaisen Episode 7, Assault. Satoru Gojo is assaulted on the way to a meeting by Jogo. This is I don't know why they went with this name for the cursed bird who kind of becomes his sort of quasi rival, but not really, when the name is so similar at that. But maybe it's because the name is so similar that they become rivals, or, well, it's a one sided rivalry. Let's be real. And this episode is meant to illustrate that very thoroughly.
Like, because even, yeah, he's looking at this guy, he's like, oh, this guy's stronger than our demon in a boy is right now, but that's not really a problem for me, because as he's keep pointing out, this guy's like, dude, I'm not really worried because you're weak. And the guy's like, fucking,
I'm great, you suck, I'm the best.
I mean, like, obviously, he opens it up by slamming into the ground, so your man jumps back, and then making a volcano appear in the side of the road to blow him away. And it's like, okay, that was fucking easy. And the guy's still alive. He's like, the fuck, the guy's still alive. So he runs in, sets his head on fire, and then like punts him into fucking nothing and sets the whole thing on fire. And he's like, I was just shooting the shit. And then your man's still in the explosion, just kind of like, I fucking punched you though. I set you on fire.
No, you didn't.
But you didn't die, though.
Didn't hit me.
And he's like, yeah, you can't hit me. There's an infinity between me and you. Not like in terms of power levels, but like a literal one. Come over here. Come here. Put out your hand like this. Put out your hand.
Ooh, we're almost touching. Ooh, isn't that weird?
And it's like, yeah, I can't fucking touch you. And it's like, oh no, it's okay. Don't make it. It's cool. I mean, like we could get closer if you want. And he's kind of interlocking fingers and being all like, this guy's like being sexy to the fucking monsters. I can see why he's a fan fucking favorite.
He's being an asshole as well.
He's being a real jerk about it. Yeah.
That's funny. It's funny. I thought it's a kind of cool idea where it's infinity, and it's just like as you get closer to it, it's just like the distance that you can travel gets halved and halved and halved again, so you never actually get there. It's like a principle in natural physics that I've encountered in a couple of books I've been reading in the last while. It's like, oh,
I'd
cool
say
to
the
see
authors
here.
Have been reading the same books or the same kind of stuff. It's like, that's cool. That'll make a cool superpower.
See, also, JoJo's Bizarre Adventure Part 6, Stone Ocean, which, well, maybe more on
everyone,
that.
Everyone reading the same cool theoretical physics.
It was pretty good.
It's a very good fight. Again, they're using the budget and the space, and I was just like, the way they were flying through those fucking CGI trees and everything, that looked beautiful.
Yeah. Zipping around, one then dunks the volcano dude again to a lake to cool his head off a bit.
And then he's like, oh, this is a good opportunity. So he checks in on our boy, who's watching Lord of the Rings Part 1.
He's watching the end of the Lord of the Rings. He's up to the hard stuff right now because, you know, it's a struggle to keep it together at the climax of the Fellowship of the Ring because so many things happen.
I'm never going to leave you, Mr. Frodo. Except, you know, off-brand Mr. Frodo because we can't use that. And your man's watching him and he's like, he still has the baby, the bear, punchy bear thing asleep. And he's just like, fuck, this is an emotional scene. He's doing pretty good. We're going to
He should have walked in when... it was Aragorn saying goodbye to Boromir because, you know, if that's like.
Isn't that the next brother. Movie? Oh, no, that is this movie. Sorry.
It's
No,
if one, my brother, my captain, my king. That is the one. That's a real test of your curse energy control right there.
I feel like the Sam and Frodo thing is like. It's an extra bit because you're after watching that. There's a lot of emotions going, and like, if it hasn't gotten you already, it'll get you by then. Man, I gotta rewatch those films. I keep thinking I need to.
it's a good Christmas one, but because they were released all around Christmas, so it comes around. So, you know, hey, we got a long winter ahead of us.
And skip the Hobbit. But yeah.
It's like, hey, kid, I want to show you something. It's really cool. I don't know how you do that. Because the power of infinity,
when he asked him, it's just like, hey, weren't we at the fucking school like 5 seconds or 15 seconds ago? And he's like, yeah, we warped here. And he's like, okay, he's just not going to fucking explain it to me. Fine, whatever. And your man's just like, I can't kill that guy. He said to kill that guy or capture that guy and then make friends with that kid. So I can't kill him. That makes me look bad. I'm going to make it look like, oh, what, are you using him as a human shield? He's like, no, he's just going to watch. He's just here to watch. So don't worry about him. He's like, you know, I could like kill him. You're just making it tougher yourself. He's like, no, because you're so fucking weak, dude. It doesn't make a difference to me.
And he just literally blows his stack. I mean, you'd have to hear Shigeru Chiba go full on screech mode.
He does a lot of screeching earlier, but he goes super screechy at this stage because he does some screeching on the attacks. And it's nice. It's just like they're not overusing it, but they're using it very nicely.
Just brings Bushman into his domain. He's got a rad name, Coffin of the Iron Mountain.
Oh, it's a good one. Yeah, and it's basically like, you're inside a volcano. That's his domain. And he's surprised because initially when I bring people inside here, they just instantly set on fire and die. So this is a little different. Guess I got to do something more than that. And he's explaining it to the kid. It's like, okay, so this is a domain. You basically expand your fucking your innate curse power and make a thing that make sure all your attacks 100% hit. They will not miss. So as he's saying this, as the dude like flings some lava fucking rocks like to stab him and shit, and he's like breaking them. It's like, so the thing is, you can't dodge it. So you do have to use your own power against it. But like, that's like very technical. I wouldn't recommend that. The other one is you can break out of the domain. That's really hard. So I wouldn't recommend that. What you can do though is bring up your domain inside their domain, and the strongest one wins. Which is what I'm going to do right now.
Ooh, I'm gonna do it not blindfolded.
Yeah, just for all the fucking fans out there, ladies, fellas, he also has beautiful eyes.
I appreciate that it didn't like wait out for so long to see like why it looks like underneath the blindfolds. But no, let's get it out of the way right now. I mean, also if you were watching in credit sequence, you would have seen him wearing some shades, actually chopping for some cool shades in one of the little scenes there.
He has to wear the blindfolds and cool shades because his eyes are just too beautiful. They just distract you unless he's really trying to kill you.
Domain expansion, infinite void, and it's just this an infinite void, and an expanse of space of a galaxy is opens up around them, and with that you're just bombarded with
like initially you an infinity of information. I can't feel anything. It's like, no wait, I can feel everything, but that means I don't know really which to focus on, so I can't fucking move. And your man's explaining this to them, it's like, yeah, so basically every if you do an action in here, you have to do it over an infinite number of times, which is what I'm doing to talk to you right now, because I'm fucking great. So yeah, you're kind of fucked, dude. But I would generally just kill you right now, but I need you to answer a few questions. Chops off his head.
Yeah. That's a little flourish, too, when this goes to that silhouette smart with this big scarlet stain. It's pretty cool.
There's a lot of good looking stuff this episode, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Geto and Hanami are watching, think, okay, maybe you go help him out if you want to. I can't be seen around here, so I'm gonna duck out.
We do get his dialogue backwards. It's subtitled backwards, which I feel is a bit cheap for me watching at home, because I feel like that's much harder to do listening to the Japanese and then like translating all of it backwards in your head that he said.
And Nami just drops down with some little curse technique, but just like. Creates a field of flowers. It's like, oh, flowers so pretty. And, oh, yeah, that's so nice. But that's happening on my face. Oh, that's a sad trick. And he's running off with his head.
Yeah, he's running off with the head, but he's also whipping the kid into the air at a spiky tree monster guy. And he's like, I'll be fine, sensei. Just go without me. He's about to be whipped into a spiky tree. He's like, actually, no, I'm fucked. Help, 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 please. And he does, it's like, oh, that's pretty good. Like this, he knew that he couldn't take me. It's like that guy might actually be more dangerous and creepy than the volcano guy.
But still, as well, we take a lot of special great curses here that can like form us kind of plans and hold conversations with you.
They're obviously forming an alliance. That's definitely important. So he turns
and to somebody like, and somebody told them about me as well. About. What they would have to do to defeat me, and to do all these like details about me. They couldn't defeat me, of course, but I'm being targeted by them, by somebody.
They knew to target me, for one. Yeah, yeah. There's definitely planning going on here rather than random curses. And he's like, that's a bit of a pickle. So he sent the kid, is like, we're going to move on to the next stage of your training where I'm going to fight you. And also, we're still going to watch movies. So you can be ready for the competition. And he's like, what competition? I didn't tell you about the competition. Maybe I'm not a very good teacher.
That is often the case.
For sure.
Geto retires back to his humble dwelling, his humble abode.
Small apartment complex.
Small apartment. But man, he's done a real good job on the inside of it, because it opens onto a private beach.
Pretty nice. We got our octopus curse in the water.
Dagon. Yeah. It's like with these like weirdo special grade curses out there, the Dagon is like not doing much, but just hanging around, just like bobbing on the waves, looking cute.
Yeah, just chilling. This is a place for chilling. We got also a new curse that's like a stitched up Frankenstein looking dude hanging in the shade. And our boys show up. He's like, "Hey, man, how'd you do with the fight?" And he's like, "You're gonna fucking ask me that? I'm a severed head. What the fuck?"
Sorry, I told you what would happen though, but.
But they're both of them know, or just like, yeah, you egged him on though, right? You were like, oh, you couldn't possibly beat him. You're way too weak in comparison. And he's like, that's just going to rile him up. And he can tell that. He's like, you guys fucking did this on purpose, you sons of bitches.
But we got our some information out of that, and we know that, okay, this is what we're going to do. We got to like seal, start to record his movements. I think we're all obvious to us by now, but we're going to go ahead with the plan. And it's going to happen on October 1st in Shibuya. That's when it's all going to go down.
It was October 31st. They're doing it on Halloween.
October 31st.
Yeah. No, I thought you said first. Maybe I misheard you. But we're going ahead with the plan. That's how it's going to go. We all cool, and then we get a name and introduced, I guess, formally to our
Maito.
Our new curse, our current new curse, Maito. And it's just like, oh, fucking shit's gone down. But I really enjoyed the after credits one, because this time it's with the baddies.
when you're on a beach, you've got a severed head rolling around, and of course you're going to do a riff on Captain Tsubasa.
I did like, it's like, what are you guys doing? You know, he said in a severed head. It's like, we're doing Brazilian calisthenics. And it's like, why did they specify Brazilian? Yeah. Poor bastard. He's like, I'm going to kill all these fuckers when I grow my body back.
Ghetto, pass it to me. Okay, I got it. Oh, go for this tornado shot. Boom. It's a goal. Back in the net. Yay.
It's one of those situations where I enjoy being with the villains again. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
It's another comic, kind of be like Golden Comic, is able to flip quite easily and naturally and smoothly between this outright farce to threat and menace.
Yeah, yeah. Especially like these guys had literally again. You saw them murder a bunch of people, but should you feel bad for the severed head? I mean, like, you did burn an entire restaurant full of people. It's like, I mean, they're kind of being a dick to him, though. They're presumably the closest thing to friends he has.
I suppose.
But yeah, it's a nice, like you say, it should be like a bit of like dissonance in terms of tone, but it really isn't. It works out quite well. I think because they've established that anyone who does this crazy jiu-jitsu stuff has to be kind of crazy themselves.
Mm.
So our goodies and baddies are both equally bizarre.
Yeah, it was. I knew I definitely just want to be a big showcase of what Gojo could do.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you guys just thought, oh, he's like the greatest living jiu-jitsu sorcerer. What can he do? Oh, I can do all of this shit. And he's going to be a complete smug dick what he's doing all of it.
Yep.
But
he's good and he knows it. Mm.
And it looks pretty great as well. And no, that's par for the course with this. There's like so much they can kind of like just expand on a bit and just go wild with whatever way they want to animate it to make it look super class. Different exercises in tone, where it's like trying to keep one way and swing the other way very drastically. We're Docking Cat Every Day is Fun, episode 7. I have another very special episode of We're Docking Cat Every Day is Fun.
You know what I was saying? I'd only watched a few things, but one of them got me. It was this. This is the one that
I was wondering, you motherfucking had me just worried for every one of these. Like, something's going to happen. It's going to upend my day, possibly my life.
No.
I didn't expect it was going to be this one, though.
No, this one got me because I'm familiar with this feeling. Because she's talking to her editor, out in drinks with her editor, I'm guessing. Because they're celebrating. Are they celebrating the book or the show in this? I think they're celebrating the book.
I don't know. I'm sure she's meeting her editor. You know, a lot of business meetings in Japan are just over booze.
Fucking might as well make a dinner and a drink out of it, right?
Oh yeah, from comics are really good. You know, that doggy yours is really cute. It's like,
I remember that old dog you had. Oh, he was fucking. He was like a fucking. He was so cute. He was the cutest motherfucker. And she's just like, I do remember my last dog. He died. What was it, like 5 years ago or something? Mm. It was a few years ago, I think, at that stage. And but the thing she kind of remembered was when he got
towards the end.
Yeah. Mm. And he was all shivering, and he looked really. And these eyes were kind of like milky, and he shit on the ground and in the apartment. And she'd be like, "Oh no, it's okay. Don't worry about it." But he looked really apologetic. He's like, "Sorry, I couldn't like hold it in." And she remembers the last times of it, and that's rough. But she was so like kind of like crying, talking to her dead dog. It's like, oh, he remembered you when you were young, and that let her remember him when he was young and happy, and when he was like at his prime and at full in life. And I've had that for pets, and I've had that for people, and it was like, ah, fuck, this one fucked me up.
yeah,
it was rough.
It's interesting, yeah, you say that you have empathy with people as well, because you can't forget sometimes that this person, you've only known them one way, maybe you've only like met them at a certain point in their life, or not even met you, i.e. maybe when you were born, because it's like your parents or or an aunt or an uncle or a sibling or anything like that.
Yeah, yeah.
A friend, anything like that. You can know them for so long and forget that, yeah, before they met you, did this whole other life behind them as well. And besides it, it's, you always seem to remember like how to go out. I guess
at least that sticks in the head.
For a time you do anyway. Yeah.
Yeah, for a time you do. And it's basically like the trauma of seeing that, just the ravages fucking that can happen a person or a pet, or someone you love, basically. And it's difficult to remember that because it's traumatic. But it is good to remember the good times and the happier times as well. That's the important part. And I was just like, yeah, that's a good message, but you shouldn't be able to fuck me up in under 2 minutes. Show. that's not legal.
Well, that's why it tells you to tell you how much you love and care and appreciate and think that they're cute right in the moment. Like, these two little bottles of joy bars here. The cat's having none of it.
No.
But do, Yvonne, with your family, with your friends, you know, the next opportunity you get after this wretched and cursed time.
Or even over the phone or a message. Just send people a hi. Just let them know how you feel. Yeah.
Tell your mother she's cute. Right now, once you stop listening to this. Or we need to stop listening to this, but only after we talk about Dragon Quest Adventures of Dai, episode number 7, Mom's Turmoil. Mom's Turmoil?
Sorry, ma'am. Yeah. yeah, it has us... actually, it starts where we left off the last day. It wasn't a cure spell. He was paralyzed. He was under the effects of paralysis, so she hit him with a...
She shot him with a heal bullet. It's
yeah,
fine.
Yeah. It was basically like a cure paralysis spell, basically. She recognized what it was. And then she's kind of saying to Pop, it's like, hey, have you got any ice magic? He's like, yeah, I'm really good
at
ice magic. Put it in this bullet. And he's like, what? It's just fucking cast it, holding this bullet and cast it at the bullet. It'll go into the bullet. It's fine. And then just give it to me. Because obviously our boy Dai is back on his feet now that he's not paralyzed. And
yeah, he's fighting.
But he's still having trouble with this motherfucker.
Let's shoot him with ice magic and freeze his arm.
Yeah, freeze his arms, the temporarily stop him using the axe. Dai jumps up really high. The sun's coming up. They've been fighting so fucking long. And the sun kind of blinds him for a sec. And he slices down through his left eye, the crocodile's left eye. And he's like, fucking, what? You wounded me?
Both my gorgeous face. And my body. No.
How will I ever get modeling again? So he needs to get the fuck out of there. Like, the shit's not going his fucking way right now. And that's also disgraceful, because that's a very pride-wounding thing. He does have a conversation with the head of the...
Mystic Legion.
Mystic Legion. I was going to say the magic...
Zappawera, the Mystic Bishop.
Yeah, who's like, oh, you come here to laugh at me, fucking now that I failed. It's a cool name. But he's like, no, I've come here to give you this magic item to help you out. And he's like, fucking, that's pitiable. That's taking pity on me and shit. And he's like, this guy fucking chopped up the demon.
He chopped off Darlord Hadlar's hands.
Yeah, and your man's like, he fucking what? I wasn't told that beforehand. Jesus. It's like, yeah, you want a little extra fucking, like the performance enhancing magic item? I'm guessing it's cursed or something. But and he's like, I might take that. But yeah, meantime, Pop and Dai and Mam are heading back to Mam's village, and they're all like, oh, the Light of the Seer.
The toast of the town. Hey, these are the heroes. They helped out with saving little girls in forests and also to avoid that nasty monster. Like, oh, and also they are the students of the great hero tutor Eivan. Oh, wouldn't you know, this is my mother right here. She was one of the adventurers who accompanied Eivan in his original quest to defeat the Dark Lord. Also my father was...
Dad was like warrior, I think, and her mom was cleric, I believe, were the classes. I'm not sure we get actually the mom's name, even though she's there.
It's nice to use the costumes from the older games in that as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I do love those. I love those designs. But, and it makes sense. It's like, mom's thing is... She's good at the cleric end of spells, but she's not so good at the attack spells, which is why she has to there's an old man who's really good at magic. We never see him do any, but it's just like, yeah, I can defend the village fine. I got a bad back, so I can't go out into the woods and shit. So he loads up her bullets of like fire spells and ice spells, and then she heads off. Cause other than that, she can load her own cure spells and shit.
Yeah, this Eivan is like, no, this gives her a gun after she's 8 years
little
old.
Little girl, you've passed all my tests. Here's a gun. She's like, Jesus Christ, you can't give me a gun. He's like, no. It's a tool. It won't be used for evil as long as you keep it and use it for justice and shit. So don't
you gotta be a good guy with a gun, man.
So he gets this little girl to accept the scary gift of gun, and he leaves her off, and they have all the great memories. And it's like, how is Master doing, actually? Is he still a fucking wacky motherfucker? And Papa's like, well, and Dottie's like, oh yeah, he's still crazy, don't you know? Oh, he's so weird. And
the hair, you know, the haircut is weird, and he's totally alive. He's definitely like the prime of his life.
Definitely alive with that dumb haircut. Great.
He went to go live on a farm somewhere. Yeah, that's it.
And Papa asked him later, he's like, dude, why the fuck didn't you say anything? It's like, ah, come on, like, she trained under him. They really care about in this village. That's like his old fucking partner. These guys love him. It'd break break everyone's fucking heart if we told them. And
do I get thrown out of here? I mean, if it means people like Lane's real tripping and made a bummer.
Yeah, he's not worried about like getting kicked out. It's more so just like really fucking up people by saying it. As he is told by Mom that she gets her spells generally from the old man who lives in town, and Papa's just saying, I'm trying to impress myself on you, hot lady. I mean, I could fill up your bullets full of magic spells for you. And you don't need to bother the old dude. And she's like, oh, yeah, cool. That'll be great. And Di's like, guy's good at magic. I should fucking go ask him if I can do magic. So he runs off and he's like, hey, old man, fucking, can you teach me magic? And he's like, didn't you fucking learn from the hero, though? It's like, I only got like 3 days of training and he's dead.
He died partway through.
Yeah, you know. Fucking don't tell anyone because it really fucking bum everyone out. But
I only got a partial grade. I got like no. Do another year of study, night school, to defeat in Demon Lord 101.
Like, I got my bachelor's, but I don't got my master's, basically, in being the hero.
So show me how. Also, don't tell Uncle Mam, who's overhearing this in the trees nearby, that Eivan is totally dead, and we're keeping this from him. We don't want to break her little heart.
Yeah, and
breaks her little heart.
Yeah, she kind of holds herself up in the room. Di kind of Di's pretty spot on. Like, not only would it really hurt people if we told them, and it's not going to make any difference that he isn't alive. It's not like they'll be waiting for him to come save the day or anything. So yeah, let's not tell him. But also, he notices, hey, Pop, you fancy her, don't you? Why don't you go talk to your girlfriend? No fucking way. I just think she's good at shooting stuff. What are you talking about? He's got him pegged.
But they must keep going. We must like go on to the castle, a continue our journey to defeat the demon lord. We must move past by back here. Hey, where's Mam? I haven't seen her. Is she coming to say goodbye to us? I haven't seen her. Or actually, she is there.
Because Pop was thinking of asking her to come with, but it's just like, nah, I mean, like, she's defending this village and shit. She's got her own life. She's got her own thing going on. We don't need to interfere with her life. But she's saying nothing, and then everyone in the village is like, well, ma'am, you're going after him, right? And she's like, what? And her ma'am, god fucking, her mother, is saying, he's like, yeah, fucking here's my old fucking staff, we know you want to fucking do it, we got the old man here, he can fucking take care of shit. And everyone's just like, yeah, fucking go for it, we packed your bags, bye.
Yeah, it's also as well, she feels kind of crap, bro. These are students of Eivan, and they're like,
they're trying to carry on his
will.
They're
going to avenge him. It's like, oh, I'm a student of Eivan too. I got stuck in this stupid town and defend the people who live here. I want to avenge him as well.
Yeah, but they're all cool with that. I don't think they know that he's dead, but they are cool with just letting her. It's like, oh, Avengerin's in your blood, because obviously you're the daughter of two adventurers. So yeah, that's gonna do it. So she catches up with him. She kind of lets slip, like, yeah, you're going to tell me what happened to Eivan eventually, but for now on, we're going to go ahead. By the way, I'm the one who graduated, so all you motherfuckers are below me. I'm the boss. Which is good.
I've got the gun here.
Gun. The person with the gun is the boss. That's yes, a fair ruling.
Yes, it is. I appreciate that she didn't. I've seen this kind of thing play out in...
Why didn't you tell me?
Other stories, yeah. Where she just lashes out at them for trying to spare her feelings. And someone has to fucking explain that to her. That,
like, they're not doing the standard.
Spare your feelings.
They're not trying to spare her feelings because she's a girl or anything like that. It's like, no, she cared about this guy. It's going to break her fucking heart. It would break anyone's heart. We know it broke Pop's heart. We saw that. The out thing of that. That's why Pop doesn't go through with it after. It's like, yeah, that really fucked me up.
Yeah. So while it's, like, you know, it is being very earnest and clear with its emotions thing, it isn't like being condescending as well either. Where
yeah.
Like these people that don't know how empathy works or something like that.
Yeah, sure.
It's like, oh yeah, so well, of course you would feel bad after seeing a master get killed in front of you, exploded, vaporized near in front of you. Of course, that's going to do a number on you. And, you know, it lets him show that. And the same with Mam, you know, she's, I feel still weird if we were to say, because it feels like I'm talking about my own mother.
Yeah. Fucking never stop accents are a bitch.
Maybe I'll forget about next week when we get the full-scale, like, demon beast invasion of the kingdom. So probably some good action scenes on the way. As always.
Pretty rad. Yeah, good character bits this episode. The fight continued to be pretty cool, but, like, not so much impressive animation as there has been. But, you know, I mean, like, that's a big fucking beast invasion. Should be good.
Much camera affair, but no less emotionally fraught is Taisho Samurai Episode 6, Samurai Father and Daughter. Another Rei episode. But it's kind of a combination of things that have been kind of building up to. It was like, what will this little girl who's, you know, since outwardly definitely seems like she's very well put together and is like, able to handle things well enough, even with her father running off wanting to do gymnastics all the time and leaving her alone in the house to mind the place for so long. And what happens when she has nobody to turn to? What happens when the person who's trying to get by on her own and be this latchkey kid, what happens when the kid part comes to the fore and they gotta deal with a real crisis and nobody can help them?
Yeah. You've lots of people like reacting differently. Like, at least your man managed to say to his daughter, listen, I want to go to this training camp. I think it'd be really good for me, but it's over your birthday. Are you cool? Not asking for permission, but basically going like, are you cool with this? And she's like, no, that makes sense. Fucking, yeah, go for it.
No, she's not that way immediately.
Not immediately, but she is like definitely leaning that way without saying how she's feeling.
I said improving in episode 1 where he couldn't fucking tell her the entire day that they're out of the team.
He has improved, yeah. Which is good, but yeah, not quite there yet.
Isn't to say then, though, that while he's doing either is entirely the right thing, because she seems to be okay, but she's not really. Because he's also like worrying out of one where Leo has gone to, because he hasn't come back home yet either.
I did like the opening with is like where she's annoyed with Leo. It's like, if you're not fucking here for my birthday, then you're not family. And then the dad has to go like, hey, not going to be around for your birthday. Having not heard that, obviously. But yeah, she's worrying about Leo. She kind of says to her granny, I thought the granny was the maternal grandmother, but I was completely wrong about that. I only found out this episode. She's like, your man's mother? It's like, oh, he only brings fucking trouble. Why did I raise such a kid or something like that?
Yeah, well, you would think because granny is a famous actor and Ray's mother was a famous actor as well. So, it must be a lineage of acting, right? It was like, it was out of way. Probably just running the same circles. Maybe that's how.
Yeah, it could be met.
How she introduced her to her stupid gymnast son.
But she's saying it's like, oh, because obviously you're our Garu girl, kind of going like, hey, is that ninja back yet? Because I'm sick of fucking working here on my own. And it's like, no, he's not back yet. And the grandmother's kind of like, you know, we let people in, we don't fucking ask no questions, and if they want to go, we fucking let them go, we don't ask no questions, it's fine. You need to be like that with people in your life, and the girl's kind of like, dude, that's pretty harsh, and it's like, it'd be harsher if we told her, it's like, everything's going to be fine, he's totally going to come back, and then he doesn't. That would actually break her heart. We need to kind of steal her for hardness, which is a bit of tough love, but at least it's love, yeah, from the granny.
Yeah, but she's, you know, thinking she's gotta get hard as well. Gotta get tough. She's used to, you know, going out and getting the messages, getting the groceries and so forth. Dirt Tower rings back from, I'm at a training camp, but no, I might not be back until later on. I might just have dinner here. No, we'd be all right. She's just like, yeah, that's cool. That's cool. So it's like,
and I did like the way it presents it from his point of view, because he does take the, and your man's like, you're really going to take the phone call? The guy giving the presentation? And he's like, yeah, I got to talk to my daughter, dude. But he's like, I will turn my phone off now. Sorry, everyone. Because everyone's kind of giving him a look of, dude, no, this is not professional.
Yeah.
But you do appreciate, like, he's like, I'm not going to fucking hang up on my daughter. I was like, no, I'm going to take this call, but I am going to turn off my phone straight after. But yeah. She's kind of like, yeah, no, it's cool. You can come back later. And she's out the shop and is like, I guess, you know, fuck it. I'm just going to get fucking takeout. I'm just going to get fried chicken, chips, fuck it.
I'm 8 years old. I'm left at home in the house by myself. I can have ice cream for dinner if I want.
I can watch. I can eat fucking KFC and watch Ghostbusters. No one can fucking stop me. I'm not even gonna fucking clean this shit up. Fuck it. It's someone else's fucking problem. But then the food
falls on the floor,
and Big Bird eats the chicken. It's good chicken, he says. And then he sees a picture of the chicken on the box, and he's like, "Oh my god, I'm a monster."
Fades or goes into a fit in the spot. He's like, "Oh no, Big Bird! Oh shit! Oh, I gotta call Granny. He's not picking up. Oh, Dad, he's not picking up either."
And she's bringing.
I gotta bring him to the vet myself.
She's bringing the bird in the basket on the bike down to the vets, and the vets was like, "Yeah, don't let a bird eat bird stuff," which isn't true. Some birds fucking love bird stuff. I know my dad kept birds, and he always fed them boiled eggs, and that was so weird to me. I was just like, "Oh no, they love it." Apparently, I was like, "I don't know, man. That seems weird."
Well, there are carnivorous birds.
There are carnivorous birds. I'm talking like fucking like canaries and shit, though. Are they carnivorous? I guess they eat bugs. It was some kind of songbird anyway, but I was just like, that thing's weird, man. But yeah, as long as they don't know it's bird, I guess. It's like, well, that doesn't look like an egg. It's all fucking bouncy and everything. I don't know. But yeah, the doctor's like, yeah, don't feed a bird birds. That's
fucked up, kid.
That's fucked up. I'll keep him overnight and see if he improves. And she's like, yeah, fucking, like, call me if you need anything, kind of thing. She used to go home, and she's like, oh my god, I've killed my family pet, the beloved family pet that I was seeing a flashback. Not her granny got her because her mam died. It's like basically giving her like a little friend.
It's a quite a touching backstory to Big Bird, the South American like terror beast.
It was small once, but they called it Big Bird because it had a big beak back then, even.
It was it's a cute little thing. It's kind of hops out. It's like, burp, burp, burp. Oh, you should smile.
Yeah. It's a cute little bird. And then it turns into a big bird.
I know, it's okay. As big as a Labrador.
Yeah, but I mean, like, a Labrador is a cute puppy, but when it grows as big as it is, it's still kind of cute. It's just bumping into things more.
George Turo comes home and she's not around. It's like, oh god, she's gone. And then like his mother calls. Oh, fun! I got missed call.
Not so much until the ninja comes. It's like, hey, I'm home, everyone. He's like, where the fuck were you? It's like, I left a note saying I was training. He's like, dude, what the fuck? It's like, where's Rachel? And he's like, she doesn't seem to be in. She must be at the bar. And he's like, did she take the bird? Says the ninja. And your man's like, wait, the bird's missing. Something's fucking wrong.
And the one was like earlier in the week, they were watching a news report about gangs of teens roaming the streets, causing crimes with their bleached hair and their strange fashions.
It's like fucking teenagers with their cool dyed hair and their tans and cool clothes doing rap battles or all kinds of mischief. Ooh.
So they're worrying after her, and then it goes to Ray. She's crossing the footbridge, and then she's just like, oh man, there's some fucking, like,
some shady looking menacing teens
coming out the bridge. I better go out of the way. Oh no, it's like some kind of girl gang coming the opposite side. Oh man, they've got me pinned in. What do
we're
I do?
We're obviously about to throw down, and they're kind of like roll up in there, and then they call, like, yeah, Granny, we found her.
Found her.
Because obviously the granny and the Gary girl know all the cool kids.
Well, actually, Mew had gone on the phone and said, okay, hey, just okay, dispatch like, operation
yes.
Girl find.
Yeah, they have a code name for it, all right.
The pig is in the poke.
So the granny shows up, obviously, because her informants have kept her informed. And she's like, you can't just be running off like that, you little delinquent. Which is like, again, I thought that was a funny kind of thing. It's like, these guys aren't delinquents. They're looking for little lost girls at night. They're cool. These teenagers are cool. But her dad kind of rushing up to her is like, you can't do that. I'm so worried and everything like that, you know, freaking out.
It's like, dad, I don't know how to ride the bike.
It's like, yeah, you got me the bike for your birthday, but then you went into the training camp and you never taught me to read. I mean, ride a bike. and I was just like, oh, that was a sweet moment and everything. And then the ninja comes along and is like, the ninja's here for the group hug too. And he's like, you motherfucking ninja, you fucking say how long you're going to train for, you stupid shit. She actually like gives him a lot of stink. She gives a little stink in school to that kid who's treating her better as well. I think that kid probably fancies her, honestly. Like a little crush.
Yeah.
But like, and he's like, should I start doing the ninja art, the bow thing? And she was like, no. But the ninja also does the bow thing later. He's like, sorry, I'll say how long I'm going to be gone for next time.
Yeah.
And we get a nice touching moment of them. I mean, I assume this is the next day because that was at nighttime, but the sunset thing, I was like, daddy's going to teach her how to ride the bike. It's like, wait, no, she's got amazing fucking balance. It's like, oh yeah, I'm a gymnast. Yeah. And her mother was an incredibly graceful actor. Because that's the thing the granny points out. I was like, you saw the best side of your mother. Not that she was putting on a performance for you, but she only showed you the best side. She also get out, sometimes slapped your dad upside the head when he was being a dipshit because he needed it. She was a clusterfuck in her own way, and you don't need to be perfect. But at bicycling, this kid has fucking things. I think she's going to be like a stunt racer. She puts the bird in the basket, like starts doing sweet fucking jumps and stuff.
Doing ET.
The bird hates it. It's had its, I imagine, flight where it clipped, so it is terrified at speed.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's all nice. It all works out pretty good.
Yeah, it was just nice to, see Rachel, you know, she's not this perfect child either, but she's trying to emulate somebody who, you know, because this is also kind of known as well as, like, as one of her parental role models,
yeah,
was her mother, who seemed to have it all together all the time, but... forgetting that, oh yeah, like your mother was this amazing actor. Of course, she knows how to act and conceal her emotions, especially around you or child. I give it a wrong idea.
She was trying to act and show you the best way to be, and she didn't want to show you the shitty side of herself. Not that she was hiding or pretending. It's just like she wanted to be a good person for you, but you kind of picked that up as she was perfect and never had any flaws, which is not true.
Yeah, but she bends and she breaks, like, you know, because he's only a human being as well. And as well, you're only like a child. You know, you're in a weird situation right now with a lot of weird things happening around you and weird relatives and kind of sometimes kind of ninja friends popping in and out of the house.
Some sort of terror beast as your pet, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, don't be so hard on yourself when things go wrong. Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, she says to her dad, it's like, I'm cool with you going to the fucking thing. It'll be good for you. We can celebrate when you get back, that kind of thing. It's just like, this is important for you now. And she's emotionally mature enough to recognize that, but she's not going to deny herself. And I'm glad we got an episode to cover all that stuff. But the post-credits thing is our ninja boy doing a... I've forgotten the name of it. It's a ballet stance, isn't it?
Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, it's so fucking quick. Like if you flipped out through the credits or looked away for a second, you'd probably miss it. So I was just like, the ninja cowl falls off and he does like a little pose, and I'm just like, okay, because I thought he was like a gymnast, so maybe he's a related kind of physical performer who's pretending to be a ninja, or he's really a ninja. I don't fucking know yet.
Alien.
Sure.
And those are real Men in Black. And Women in Black trying to hunt them down. I must actually look back over previous episodes and see if Ray was walking the bike.
I think she was. It's actually very well done because she's just there holding the handlebars and walking alongside it. And she does that rushing to the vet's office and this. And I was just like, that's really fucking good that they've actually been seeing that. If you'd notice, she was never riding the bike, just walking alongside it. Very, very well done.
Another thing I went back and watched was Healing Good Pretty Cure, episode 31, Byogen's Evolution, Healing Good Arrow. The thrilling conclusion to the zoo episode arc thing.
The zoo arc, yeah.
Or they think they've done a great job of dispatching the monster. It's like, hey, the puppy is still sick. What's going on? It's like, the teacher is feeling sad over that way. A teacher? What thought they only infect, like, rocks and trees and flowers and shit? What's going on here? It's like, oh, man, our teacher's been transmogrified into a monster, man. He's smashing the place up. He's not even, like, a mega Byogen. He's a giga Byogen. It's super fucking tasty. And it's just a more massive monster that's shooting out sickness rays all over the wider area, and it's like acres and upon acres of the landscape in a single shot. It's like, oh crap! They get trying their best, I guess, but they get like rebuffed fairly easily. This thing is tough as nails, and they don't know how they're going to do it. Shindoine is doing her best, hand across the mouth, laugh. It's like, yes, I've evolved. Putting the evil parts inside myself, I can. I've achieved a new level of evolution. I can destroy the entire world. They just show up, those two other dudes who have always been putting me down. I finally get the attention of my beloved Lord Byogen-sama, King Byogen-sama. And the girls are going, what the fuck are we going to do? That thing is bulletproof. Like, even Cure Earth, who's been carrying this team for the last few episodes with her for her moves, couldn't put a dent in it. What the fuck are we going to do? Kent, the young lad, he's the son of the teacher. He's like, oh, my dad can turn into a monster. I don't know what I'm going to do. And I think, don't worry, kid. We're going to get your father back. No, like, can you say, no, we can't say that because we want to find a way that your dad's going to be okay. I'm pretty sure of it because, man, if there's pure and good left in this world, we gotta do it. It's like, come on, guys, we gotta fucking do this for the young lad. You know, it seems tough, but we gotta try our best again. Let's fucking regroup, give her another go, but fucking take it down, all right? So they regroup, you know, it's appeared again in the very handy Tokusatsu dockyard area where there won't be many people around and lots of warehouses that can blow up.
And maybe the quarry was occupied, yeah.
I suppose so, this week, yeah. And they just show up, transform, and they just start going on this thing. And they just empty out their store of the special bottles they've gotten from their previous rescues of the elements. And I just love how they're just really pouring it on. They're just like, give them the ice beam, give them the fucking the tornado blast, give them give them fucking the just everything that's like just been thrown at. They're just emptying every bit of ammunition they got into this thing. But it doesn't work. And okay, we gotta do that to team up, move and attack it that way. We'll just combine together, okay, get the tambourines out, tap, tap. Yay, healing oasis, fire! But it fires its own shot back and it fucking cancels arrows out. It's like, fuck it, even the finishing move isn't gonna work. Now, what the hell are we gonna do? And they kind of fall into despair. Like, even Cure Earth, who's like the sort of the robot who's been programmed to exercise germ monsters, like, can't do it. It doesn't seem to be in any way. We can't put a dent in it. But I said, no, there's gotta be a way. We just have to find, hold each other up even right now. And that's again calling back to, whoa, we're so many kind of different people that, you know, one of us falls down because we may not get react to this in all the exact same way. But if we can support and fit in the gas in each other to buoy ourselves up, that's better teamwork. Let's do that. The new super move, where all the bottles that they did have all get poured into one big bottle, and they're going to use that, and also going to smush all of the animals together into one wand.
Oh,
and they're all going to fire off. Well, the thing is, when they're transforming into a particular form, their healing animal partner is just a little face gets in the wand and is talking to them. So now it just gets all combined together into one thing that they're all going to use.
What I'm saying is that you're saying they're turning all their guns into one big gun, and they're turning all their ammo into one big bullet.
Yeah. But then they all get going, but then they kind of spits off again, they all get individual guns. It's like it's maybe like a bow and arrow or a crossbow, but it's also a syringe. It's not like an old little, like.
Okay.
So you kind of pull it back like that, because they're doctors, it's healing good, pre-cure, right. Remember like that. And this is the healing good final, what's this called? Final healing good shower.
Okay.
What seems to be, they have angel wings, they get a little more, it's accoutrements in the costume, it's all shiny and cool. It's like, oh, it's looks pretty, all the animals are flying around, it's very cute. And then there's fire, there's like four massive beams all at once. Kind of like the very stark kind of change in this when you actually fire it off. It's like, oh, it's all kind of sparkles, it's very soft focus, and then poof, death ray.
Then the bass drops, yeah.
Yeah, but a death ray that shoots out the teacher from inside the body of the giant monster and puts him to safety. And we got a healing goodbye. It's like, yeah, sweet. We got like the mid-season power-up. This is what we needed to take on the new monsters. But then, like my sis, Toji Innkeeper's training, episode 32, they're on doing their work experience job. I guess this is something for school. And to just ask her friend, just ask Chiyu, who her family owns the Ryokan, owns Tradition Lane. Hey, can we just like scab jobs and just offer you, let's say we work for your place one day and that'll be our our work experience day. It's like sure, around or whatever. And so they go around kind of just doing all the regular jobs of like how to turn down a room, how to, you know, deliver the utmost hospitality to our guests and stuff like that. But also hanging around is Toji's younger, is Chiyu's younger brother Toji. You know, I guess he's also expected to inherit some part of the business, so he's trying to be trained in the ways as well. But I guess he's a bit subconscious because Chiyu, she's obviously being groomed to be the new, the future landlady, and she's well top of us, like, good supervisors, good manager, able to steer, like, you know, the Kaya Hinata and all their, like, their classmates in of what, how to do all the jobs and, you know, how to properly turn down a room.
Mm-hmm.
But Toji's being, like, energetic, you know, he's trying to carry, like, two rooms worth of the cushions, like, down the hallway to be laundered. It's like, oh, he's rushing around, but he's like, he means well, but he's a bit clumsy.
Mm.
And similarly, when he's out, like, scrubbing the pond outside, a puppy is on the edge of the water. And he's like, hey, puppy, can't come in here. No, puppy, don't go underwater. He tries to not to stop him falling in. He falls in himself. It's like, what's all this commotion? Toji, okay, well, you better go inside and get changed out of those wet clothes. We'll take care of this. And he's like, fuck it. I feel such a little fuck up again. Oh, man, I feel so bad for myself. And bumps into this massive dude, Mr. Chikara, one of the guests. He's like, ha, ha, ha. What's wrong, little boy? I'm a big muscle man. It's okay if you feel bad. I know how youngsters can be. And Tio says on one side, Toji, can't be fucking be down in the mouth when the guests are around. You gotta be fucking be the embodiment of the paragon of hospitality. Like, I'm sorry, sis. Like, I'm just not being on the grip. It's not, just like, we'll take care of it. No, just like, just remember what I said to you. And he's kind of feeling embarrassed and stuff because, like, no. I'm his sister, but maybe I shouldn't have dealt with that more as a sister, unless, like, his manager.
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
Yeah. But Peggy Tan has been watching from the rafters all this time, and actually asks Asami is being, like, the photographer, kind of, like, documenting the, I guess, this group study, this work experience thing on the camera, and says, hey, could you just, like, do a favor for me? He's been watching Toji going around, and you kind of see Toji as the rival because, you know, Chiyu's is, like, you know, obviously the perfect daughter, the preferred sibling of his family, you know. She's going to inherit the innocence. But he's like, nah, Toji's actually an alright kid, and I should do him a solid right here as well. And he says, hey, buddy, what's wrong? It's like, oh, I feel like bomb because I'm trying to, like, you know, be a good innkeeper as well. My tariff when your sister was so perfect and all.
Hmm.
It's like, well, you've got good qualities too. Like, I mean, you're hardworking because you're trying to, like, you're hardworking and you're trying to find your best as well. And also, you're very kind because you only fell into the pond because you're trying to save that puppy. It's like, how did you know that? Well, see, a little bird told me, literally.
Hmm.
It's like, no, just somebody's keeping an eye out for you. So you got a friend of who's watching out for you. So don't be too hard on yourself. But oh no, monsters. Gotta get the monsters. It's been a little meeting in the underworld. King Byogan is impressed with Shindoi and his evolution. It's like, hey, you other two layabouts, you should get some, like, monster parts into you as well to level up. Guaiwara was like, yeah, sure thing, I'm a big dumb muscle dude, give me that. Oh, I'm cool, I got wings and a tail, I got eye makeup as well, I'm gonna raise some hell and make some monsters. Diaries is like, I think I'll wait and see how it turns out for YouTube before I start shoving anything into my body. But Guaira's on the scene making monsters. He's actually ambushed Mr. Shikara, the big muscle man. Now you got a big muscle monster like Giga Byogan running around, and you gotta, like, you know, go fight that. So they're working away on battling that then. When, oh no, the puppy turns up and gets into the fray as well. It's like, oh no, puppy, get out of the way! But Toji, like, is there as well, trying to save it. And Chiyu's got, like, no fun getting away and protect him. But I can see, like, no, oh, he's working so hard. He's even willing to run into, like, the midst of a monster battle and save this puppy. It's like, he truly is kind. He truly is hardworking, and like, he just wants to do it. It's like, anything for the hospitality of our guests, whether it be human or dog or otherwise. Like, ah, oh, that's a spirit. You will go far on this business, kid. Not that I would know that, being Cure Fontaine and not your sister Gio, of course. You run along now and get that puppy to safety. Then we can shoot this monster. And saved the Mr. Carla Muscle Man again. And it's revealed that dog was his. It was his adorable little puppy that he brought with him on the stay at the inn. And, oh, this is a great place to be because after all the commotion, you're able to hang out with my puppy. What a great inn. You're going to get some review of TripAdvisor. 5 Six stars out of five. A++ would be turned into a monster ad again.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's got to be, like, an extra fucking star you can give him for, you know, saving your dog and monster fights or something. That's got to be an extra fucking rating, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's the kind of thing where it did seem to, like, kind of weird bit about one, you can't be looking down a matter on the guests. It seemed to be like very much like this is like Japanese business school thing. As if when you got to be like the paragon, you got to be let nothing slip.
You know the amount of places that insist you fucking, especially service industry stuff, where you have to smile all the fucking time.
Mm.
Yeah,
so take it easy on that. Also, well, but also to look out for your own qualities, because, you know, while you might not be as good at this as somebody else, you could have your own thing that you are good at, you know.
In like this kid's case, he's dedicated. Even if he's not particularly good at the job, at least he's fucking trying hard.
Yeah. Looked really good in the prior episode when they're fighting I could be working for the first time, and again, we're just emptying out all the special powers that God is unloading ice beams and fire and tornadoes into this thing. Mm-hmm. So it looks pretty good. And it's just a good thing where I'm flipping around and doing combination die kicks on it. More good stuff. It looks like it may be some more of that next week, because we have a memorable reunion, my gift from the past, where the doctor who treated Nodoka when she was ill comes for a visit to see how she's getting on. The same doctor, as we know now, had no effect at all, and anything he did had no effect on the illness, because we know it was caused by magical monster germs instead. But if we're lucky, based on the shots they show us, could we have a nice throwdown with Kira Grayson and Darwizen in there? So I hope. I look forward to that. But we're going to round things out with Moriarty the Patriot, episode number 6, The Noatic, Act 1. We're going to go on an ocean liner cruise, the maiden voyage and its journey to Amsterdam of the Noatic.
Not before we see like a blood moon hunting of a man by a man, but that's just the setup to let you know what kind of motherfucker we're dealing with, I guess.
Yeah, as William is having a little briefing with the rest of the office, with Butters and Morn and Fred. But
so listen, okay, we're all agreed.
Here's the big picture, okay? Yeah, go on.
You're all agreed. We must destroy royalty. And your man's like, yeah, just tell me who to fucking kill. It's like, okay, we can't dismantle society that fucking well. What we can do is set up a stage, let's call the stage London, and we can have a bunch of crimes happen, make it riddled with fucking crime, and make the nobility the fucking baddies, and then everyone will want to fucking murder them, and then society will change. So we'll convince them through our play of making London a crime-ridden cesspool that class society and shit needs to fucking be dismantled.
Yeah, well, what we're going to do is we're going to have crimes that involve, you know, the upper crust. We're going to kind of catch them right in the act red-handed in front of the crowd is going to be baying for their blood. And
eventually they'll want to dismantle the whole fucking thing. We're going to practice on this fucking boat that I've diagrammed behind us.
Yes. And who is the worst dude we can find to test out our method on? Well, we've found him. What's his name again? Blitz.
Oh, yeah. They say his name a few times and I've fucking forgotten it. Something Lord, something Blitz or something. Yeah.
Blitz Liners. Oh, what's his name?
That's good.
But he's like, no, the worst dude. The worst dude you could ever come across. The worst dude you can think
of. Yeah, the guy, he's just like, oh, I can't believe I have to stand here with all these other scum. And a concierge walks up to him and is like, sir, they have many different class. They have first, second, and third class things, all at moderate prices for their station. And he's just like, I can't believe this kind of magnificent ship should only be for the upper crust, for the rich. And it's clear who this fucking concierge is. It's one of our boys in disguise, just trying to rile him up. And
Fred is like one of the I guess the ticket inspectors, and Moore is at the head of the gangplank, you know, letting people in.
Yeah, but is like getting his ladies, like, come on, high class ladies, let's fucking skip ahead of the queue. And you have some motherfucker going like, who the fuck do you think you are? Fucking get to the back of the queue. And he's like, don't you know who I am? Fucking riff raff. And he's like, my lord, please excuse the delay and go right ahead. We later found out they hired that guy to just shout abuse at him, which is really funny.
Yeah, it's just like Moran's got him in. It's like, hey, fucking, just keep riding on that guy and pissing him off. All right, well, what's all this about then? And Moran's like,
you know,
don't ask questions.
One of the things you've been paid for is no fucking questions. And he's like, all right. And they go over like, this guy is a thief, a criminal, a rapist and murderer, but he'll be put to good use in our plan. I was like, oh, this guy's getting fucking killed. I can see what they're doing. It's like, you piss off this murderer lord so much that he will kill you. And it's like, okay, that's a pretty good plan, boys. They have a few things to mess with him all around the ship. Just really trying to rile him up. He gets a telegram saying his cottage burned down. his country getaway, where I assume he does these murders.
Yeah, I wonder if it was. I must actually like just look and see what shots for the witch there. I don't know if it's just like something that was engineered by William, or was this.
I was wondering, was it like a cake? It could be a fake telegram for all we know. Yeah.
Well, it's obviously a fake telegram. It's a piss him off.
Oh, I mean, he seemed like the kind of guys who would actually burn down a cottage to piss off this guy.
They could just say it, though.
They could say it.
There's questions asked about that.
And you're on a ship, so you can't check. Yeah.
When a little girl is running around, she's got like a glass of
wine?
I guess, of Ribena, it looks like.
Wine. Hey, half a glass is good for you on a day, but I can't drink that much wine.
We're going to Amsterdam, not France.
Oh, yeah. That's true.
I spoke this blonde 8-year-old child.
He's kind of leaning into this kid who spills the drink on him, running around.
Spills Ribena on him.
Ribena on him, willy-nilly. And he's like, if you do that again, little girl, I'll fucking kill you. And just like said it into her ear when she runs back crying to her mam. And she's like, I can't. Because he was complaining. There was apparently some mix-up, and he didn't have a table set for his dinner. He's like, you can go down to like the second-class thing, and there'll be a table there for you. He's like, are you fucking joking me? And the riffraff get this far up into the high-class section of the ship. This is bullshit. This whole fucking cruise is bullshit. He's getting really, really pissed.
He's super pissed off. You know, we see him later on as like at the reception. But there's also going to be like a ballet performance held on
this. It's the first ballet at sea. I think it's the big thing that they're selling on this ship. It's a big high class function. There's a bunch of dancing.
So it was nice, like,
but all the ladies are like, yeah, I hear he's having a string of bad luck. He looks in a bad mood. Let's leave him the fuck alone. Give him a bit of space. Yeah.
He's just in the corner. He has this like evil aura surrounding him. Oh man. Vein in his forehead.
It really doesn't take much to rile up this motherfucker, honestly.
Meanwhile,
yes,
William is kind of mulling around his thoughts. Okay, all the pieces are falling together. So he stops for a spiral staircase. He's like,
He's looking at it, he's taking it in, and then you hear some lady goes like, how about him over there? What's his job? I mean, like, that'll be fucking three in a row if you can guess. It's like, let me guess. By the cut of your jib, sir, you're a mathematician by trade. And it's like,
what's up, nerd?
How did you fucking know? The ladies are excited to ask. And it's like, well, you were looking at the stairs, but you were in thought, but as soon as you caught the stairs, this interested you, and then you stepped back to take it in. Now, what kind of person would take that in? Would it be an architect or something? And it's like, nah, you were checking the stairs because you wanted to take the whole thing in, not the column at the center of it, not the artistic value, doesn't appeal to you. You were trying to see if it applies to the golden ratio because you're a mathematician. And he's like, oh, fucking well done. Let me tell you about your shit. You play the violin.
Let me read this bitch here.
Hold on. You play the violin, but you're not a fucking pro at it. You sound like you're fucking working class, but obviously you're from a higher station, but you're probably proud of your fucking roots.
On your mother's side, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, on his mother's side. And then he kind of is like, yeah, and you appear to dabble in chemistry. Bit of a chemical dependence, I'm guessing. And he's just like, am I fucking close? His one was just like, your occupation is mathematician. You have an interest in mathematics. Where he's just like, I'm going to fucking take you apart personally. How the fuck do you like it?
I'm going to read you to filth.
And your man's just like, oh, okay, this guy's pretty good. And the lady's like, come on, let's go to the fucking other deck and see if you can. I'm wondering when your streak's going to run out of guessing people's jobs. And he's like, all right, fucking good. You got me pegged good, weird blonde guy. I'll catch you later.
It was such like fun secondary school.
It was good.
Quarantine as well. With like this jock. Well, it didn't give his name as yet.
Yeah. But
this
yeah.
jock Sherlock Holmes meets the nerd William James Moriarty.
I mean, like, he's literally trying to pick up ladies and shit. Yeah.
Well, he was trying to pick up fucking Moriarty. Maybe that guy that got him this longer.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, initially trying to pick up ladies, like, something hotter over here. Yeah, whereas Moriarty's like, fuck you, buddy. Fuck you. And then one of our guys kind of goes up to him and is like, what the fuck was that about? And he's like, shouldn't be a problem for our plan. We'll go ahead with it. It should be good. But he's like, this guy's good, but it still doesn't interfere with our plan. So their plan is the guy takes up his position drinking wine really vulgarly in the middle of a corridor. And while our Lord is just like, fuck this fucking boat. It sucks. Oh, this guy. I'm really sorry about earlier, buddy. I was fucking you out of it. Come back to my cabin. Because he's got it into his head. It's like, fucking my cottage burned down. I wish I was on my hunting grounds. Why not here? Fuck it. Takes this dude to his room, locks the door. And he's like, yeah, go on, pick out whatever drink you want as an apology. And he's like, oh, fucking, and he's like, ha, 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 this is excellent. Because I'll get really pissed and then act all, like, drunk and louterly with this guy and piss him off even more. So I get to be drunk and I get to piss off this guy and I get paid. Win, win, win. And the guy's like, yeah, well, let's see which one you can pick. If you're being stabbed by me. With a paper cutter.
Was it really elaborately designed letter opener.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not even that, it's not even just got like some guy inlaid carving. It's just the letter opener, the blade of it has been painted with a design. It's all like flaming, like intertwining skulls. It's like more thing you see on like on the arm of a Hell's Angel or something.
I think the fancy letter openers are probably just like the high class end of it. Because it's just like, I think you can get ones that are just porcelain and everything. A letter opener just needs to be flat and have a pointy end, basically. But this guy gets stabbed up something fierce. And he's just like, oh, I feel fucking great. Was it good for you, buddy? Puts out cigarette in his dead ass face. And it was like, wow, that was great. And then it's like, knock, knock, knock. Hey, it's me, Moriarty, that guy you met earlier. They met earlier in passing kind of thing. I think he made that little girl spill wine on this dude. I'm just like, everything in this.
That's what I was wondering.
Because he met him right after that. I'm just like, I'm just checking in to see if you're pissed off, my lord. That kind of thing.
I was told there was like a shout that came from your room. It came to see if you're okay. Oh, there was a knock coming in. It's like, oh shit, I locked that door. I'm sure not that door. It's like, this is nothing.
And he's like, well, this is quite the pickle. He says as your man's over like a stabbed body.
This is bad for me.
See, initially I was thinking he'd send someone else in, like one of the women hangers on, or one of the staff, or not his guys who are posing as staff, but one of the staff of the ship. But I was like, he probably doesn't do that in case your man goes like, ooh, I better murder this guy just to cover up my other murder. And he's like, no, he's gonna get involved, and I feel like he's gonna do some other shit. But really good. Easily the best part is the Sherlock Holmes stuff. That was really good, like, character interplay off each other.
Yeah, this is this, like, how just bitchy it was.
Really. Sherlock was just like, I can see aesthetically how you're appreciating this architecture, whereas he's going like, you're a piece of shit back at him. I was like, how fucking dare you?
Yeah. And if it is taking some of its cues from the BBC Sherlock, you know, as we have seen, Wes, you know, is calling himself a crime consultant, a kind of terminology came up out of there. As well as the sexual tension of that, or the implied sexual tension was so, like, elevated.
There's too many beautiful boys for there not to be there. Sexual tension. Yeah.
It fits in very well with this kind of scenery. And very nice scene readers as well. Like, I really like, again, this is one where the direction really comes to the fore, and this fucking makes everything just a lot juicier. So it's great seeing things with the eyes in this.
The Lord had some fucking wonderful, like, wicked curls of the side of his mouth when he goes into like that fucking manic grin that it just cuts away from really quickly, so that it's like a blink and you miss it. Like, you're like, did he just like turn into a monster for a second? Like, yeah, basically, nearly. Really, really good design.
And then his own like blue eyes are just like glittering so wildly as well.
Yes.
He's like getting a fit of bloodlust in them. Mm-hmm. It's a really kind of class one I really liked were William James Moriarty. He's like peering over the edge of the side railing of the ship as the sun's going down. As the sun's going down and his face falls into shadow, his eyes are still illuminated.
You know, like a cat or something, yeah, yeah.
Malevolent red spheres in the shade.
And it's interesting, that kind of contrast, because obviously your man's, I think he has blue eyes, the Lord, and that go too red when he gets murderous intent. Whereas this guy, as a character, constantly has red eyes. So I assume the picture is supposed to be, he always has murderous intent. He's just more subtle about it, I guess.
Yeah, there's a really good one movement there as well. It's a very small bit of animation that I love. But just before William was about to go up to the room, Morn in disguise comes to him. That cut of meat you ordered has arrived, sir. Nudge, nudge. And he's all like, okay, very good. And just like to have, you know, a very state face. And then there's just like lightning quick, just his eyes just one dart all the way to the left and they're kind of narrow and it's just, okay, going into scheme, going into cunning mode, it's just like fun. Okay, my resolve is set. It's like it's just really kind of switching modes, like kind of switching fucking this mindsets all being told in the eyes. It was really cool.
There's some very good, like if not small, then somewhat subtle and very quick movements in there that do a lot of fucking work, a lot of lifting. They work very well. And just the general design of it, it's good. Again, I think it does a good job. The ship design, I think, is good. I didn't mind the entire CGI crowd of people waving it off because I was like, who the fuck wants to animate that? Yeah, that's fine. Make all those motherfuckers CGI. Random suit guy number 63, that kind of thing.
I'm interested in how the Spiral Strikers are coming to play because he is definitely not just looking at that nor trying to find a mathematical perfection in it. He's thinking probably, is that enough stairs? Someone was pushed down to break their neck. Probably.
That's exactly what I was thinking. Note as well. For later. I was like, he was probably appreciating it aesthetically, but also appreciating it for the murder aesthetics it's capable of. Or maybe the dramatic thing, because if he falls down the stairs, everyone will definitely fucking see. It's the main big centerpiece staircase on the ship. Yeah. It'll make a big splash.
Make it seem. Exactly, yeah. We'll see how that plays out in the Noatic Act 2 next week.
Still thoroughly enjoying this show. Again, I'll read the comic probably after the season wraps up. Because I the comic will probably be better just because it can do things in more elaborate detail.
Yeah, this is like this. That's really my kind of thing. It's one of the things, one of the series I look forward to week upon week.
Yeah, for sure.
This goes, it really justifies me so well because it's about destroying the class system.
It's so now.
Murder mysteries, kind of Victorian Gothic atmosphere to it. Mm-hmm. And the opening credits song, this time actually got the lyrics attached, translated for it too.
That's always nice when
they
do that.
So now I know that the little thing that the backing vocalists are kind of chanting, or at least like, so the teeth are cutting the teeth. And lyrics are also about the Lord of Crime dismantling this like dystopia of class that crushes everybody, the innocent underneath its wheels.
This is some good Sherlock the TV show fan fiction. You got to give it that. Yeah.
Anyways, you can hear us talk more about that next week, which should be hopefully live on the stream again if the apparatus is up and running on the 24th of November, Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
If I have my roster correct, I think I do. I look forward to that. In the meantime, what can you find us at? Well, on our side, at the very least, on Secret Inside the Madness, we will have just put up that's a baseball episode, our little side venture into watching baseball episodes and non-baseball cartoons, but our good pal Jake DeBurka will have ones there, looking at little bits of, earlier bits even, of The Simpsons, King of the Hill, and Bob's Burgers.
Mm.
Found over at secretsetofmatters.com.
Going on many tangents, but that's okay. That's the fun of it. And it's nice to kind of in our podcast to talk about these fucking Giants of the Family fucking sitcom cartoons, at least to kind of like poke into them a little bit.
Yeah. Over on Dynamite in the Brain, then, of recent things of note, we have a second part in the Samurai Champloo discussions there, mm-hmm. with Marvin and Anthony. Episode 7 to 12, if I recall correctly, which should be one in the can, it's another anime that didn't make us. Looking back at anime that you could have been enjoying on top of the Christmas Geography, and I believe it would have had Gary and Sheena talking about some stuffs there from the years when they would have been between 8, 9, 10 years old. So look forward to that over at dynamitethebrain.com. But otherwise, you can catch more Let's Go same time this week, or the time that I said, which was the 24th. And hopefully again, we'll see us live with our beautiful faces by then. So until then, see you in your dreams. Good night and good luck.
That's creeping me out, man. Yeah, have a good day, everyone.